Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence, brought to you by FNX and My Sportswear and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host here is Yannickis. How was your Christmas?
Very good, mate.
Yeah?
A good one, yeah.
What did you do?
I was at home, had the missus round, so it was all good.
What did the little one get for Christmas?
What didn't she get, to be fair?
You spotted,
yeah,
no, didn't you?
Yeah,
she was actually, no, your mum spotted her, innit?
We all did.
We all did.
She was up at 7 a.m.
The joys of parenting.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, guys, our guests tonight are none other than the super agent from the Netherlands, Linton Postumus. Great to have you back on the show, buddy. How you doing?
Fine. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, great to have you on, mate. How was your Christmas?
Good. Good.
Yeah?
Eat a lot.
So do you guys in the Netherlands celebrate Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Christmas Eve, I was flying back from Japan, so I didn't celebrate Christmas Eve, but normally we celebrate like first Christmas Day and second Christmas Day with the family, lots of food, lots of drinks, you know how it goes.
Excellent, yep. Excellent. And why were you in Japan?
I can't really say it. All the news.
Well, you know, there's a certain footballer that plays for Yokohama, isn't it?
And, but he's not the only player I have there, so, you know.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to say you went to go watch Quinton Martinez play, that's all I'm
saying. I watched the semi-final of the Emperor Cup. They played against Kashiwa Reysel, and they won after extra time. Hugo Fiera, he scored the game-winning goal in the last minute of the extra time.
Sure.
So it was a thriller, good game. And they have the final now on the 1st of January, so the players don't really celebrate New Year's Eve.
That's all right. At least I can just get their New Year's Eve out of the way and worry about the next game, I guess. Right, so our next guest is making his Shoot the Defence debut. He is ESPN's Ben Dinnery. Ben, welcome to the show. Great to have you on, mate.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure. How was your Christmas? Let's get four in.
It was hectic. I've got a fairly young family, a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. So as you can imagine, I spent most of Christmas Eve building, destroying, screwing, hammering, nailing, and got to bed rather late and then up very early on Christmas Day morning. So it's been great, but tiring.
Was you up at 7 as well, Ben?
Just a little bit before 7. I think the 2-year-old started singing around about 5:30.
Oh, dear.
We managed to sort of put him off until around about 6-ish. So it wasn't too bad, but yeah, I must admit I'm feeling it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Getting too old.
Okay, yeah, I feel you, mate.
And what about yours?
Linton's got all this to come, mate. Mr. I was born in 1999.
I'm sure it was yourself.
Mine? Mine was good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's what you'd expect. The kid got more excited than we did. But yeah, it's all opening presents. And this year she actually didn't say, oh, no, not again, like last year. So yeah, my kid got bored of opening presents last year. But yeah. Anyway. Right, so let's talk about football, shall we? And the 26th of December 2017 will forever be known as the date when the phrase medals aren't handed out in December was smashed to pieces. Manchester United's second 2-2 draw in a row reduced Man City's lead at the top to 12 points, although they've gone up to 15 points now, haven't they, after beating Newcastle tonight?
Sure.
And it's a gap that means City won't really be caught, although we probably knew that a few weeks ago. Jesse Lingard came off the bench to bag a brace against Burnley in a frustrating encounter for United. Now, unfortunately, Rodri isn't here yet, so I'm going to ask this question to you. And as you know, you watched it. I mean, look, it wasn't the Alamo when United pulled it back to 2-1, but they did enough to grab a draw. It's another frustrating performance, though, wasn't it?
Where shall I start?
Well, start wherever you want, mate.
It's the old cliche again with United, where I'll tell you what disappointed me the most about United. When they got back to 2-1, after when Lingard pulled it back to 2-1, I do not remember the goalkeeper Burnley making a save the whole game after that. That's what disappointed me. Yeah, United had all the possession, and they were probing on the wings and trying to get Luke Shaw and Young to put the ball in, but they did not create a chance after that until Lingard put the ball in the back of the net in the 92nd minute. You know, I don't want to keep referring to the United of old, because this is not the United of old. But as United fans, growing up and watching what we've been watching. This is not good enough for the standard of Man United. They've spent a lot of money in a sense of bringing seven players in when Mourinho's come in. Yes, there's this argument that he's not his squad yet or not his team, but he's been renowned for that in the past, to bring players in, to make an impact, to challenge. And United are far from challenging. They're not good enough. They're miles away from Man City, and something needs to be addressed quickly at United.
Okay, well, I'm gonna spin it now, because obviously you said before, you know, about it's not the United way, it's not this, it's not that.
Yeah.
What I need to know from you.
Yes.
We had this discussion briefly before the show started.
Yeah.
Who would you bring in? If you were to sack Mourinho now, let's say, because I'm gonna go back to your tweet, which you put out the other day, that's my next question to you.
Yeah.
Which rubbed me up the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But who would you bring in?
What we discussed before, I'd go personally for Pochettino.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Ben, quick question, mate. Pochettino, would he be the right man for Manchester United, given the squad that they've got right now?
You know, I think he's done an excellent job at Tottenham. And I think he's, as a manager, he's evolving, he's developing, and he's improving year on year. The question is, do I care who takes over at Manchester United? You know what? I'm not a big fan of United, so do you know what? Put David Moyes back in charge.
Louis van Gaal.
I mean, look, you can't knock Pochettino for what he's done in recent seasons. You know, I'm not a big fan of Mourinho. He's almost akin to Rafa at Newcastle for me in the way he sets his teams up. And you know, I like to watch exciting football. I'm the old school Kevin Keegan entertainer. Dino, you score five and we'll score six.
I'm with you, Ben.
I know that's not in vogue these days, but that's just the way I am. And I think if Pochettino came in at Old Trafford, you know, he couldn't do any worse.
Okay, fair enough.
He's not walking into a squad full of winners still. And the argument about Pochettino, what's he won in his previous clubs and what's he done, etc. But he's not walking into a team that's champions and he's going to go in as an unknown of trophies. He's, you know, United won a League Cup and the Europa last year. After that, when was the last time United won a title? 4 years ago. Most of the players weren't there. He can, I hope he can bring Harry Kane with him as well. I mean, that's what United lack, the quality in the final third. Yeah, United bought Lukaku. Lukaku's not Man United standard, for me personally. Yeah, we can say he's only been there 6 months, etc. I don't see what Lukaku's going to bring at United in the future. For me, it doesn't do enough. Not to criticise only Lukaku, the service he gets behind that, you know, as you know with Mkhitaryan, he's not your cup of tea. He doesn't do anything anymore. Mata doesn't do anything. The wide players, so predictable. Tell me one player that passed a player against Burnley
Saturday. Let me ask you a question. Tell me one Man United player that can use both feet. Tell me one.
Pogba's probably
Pogba is the only ambidextrous one.
Ashley Young could possibly use. Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. There you go. You got a standard issue that you've had. Even when you're training kids at that level, you coach them and you encourage them to use both feet. Linton, would you ever see a player at the Heerenveen Academy or the Ajax Academy only use one foot? I doubt it.
No, it's basic.
Yep.
Like you said, you know.
Basic.
So you need it.
Basic. Yeah. Absolute basic. There you go.
Not much more to say about it.
No, precisely. You're right.
Precisely.
Okay. I got taught with both feet. So
you got taught with both feet. And look what happened to you. You end up on here.
I could still use both feet, though.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, if you ask a professional player who can use both feet, you know, how can I train it? Yeah, just shoot 2,000 balls with your weak foot and you're there.
Yep.
So
Linton, the biggest example, Cristiano Ronaldo. Equally as good with both feet.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. Well, look, I'm going to go back to your tweet the other day where, you know, you said it's time for a change in all part. Yes, even Mourinho. Mm. You honestly think it's time for a change?
I'm fed up of his negative tactics.
But what negative tactics? Tell me about the negative tactics. I need to know this.
The approaches to big games where...
Big games?
Well, the big games especially, where we're happy to go to Liverpool and put 11 men behind the ball and walk away with a 0-0.
Okay, so do you want us to be like Swansea and go there and get absolutely mullered?
We're not Swansea.
No?
No, of course not.
But you're saying that we're negative, and you're saying that it's not Man United standard, and it's not this and it's not that.
It's not acceptable for me, as a club of our size, to try and go to our biggest rival. Listen, I'm four for going to get a result.
Yeah.
I'm not four to go and try and get a 0-0 for 90 minutes and not have one attempt on goal for the whole game. But I'm not. It's not only Liverpool. It's wherever we go. The only one I could think of that we've gone and had a goal was Arsenal.
He was negative against Arsenal, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's because Arsenal are there for the taking. If they weren't, he would have gone there negative and all.
But he was negative against Arsenal, wasn't he?
Was he?
Well, from what I read, apparently Arsenal had like 100 million shots.
Yeah, but that's not being negative. That's just Arsenal were good attacking it. United actually attacked
Arsenal.
And all
of United's goals were on a counter-attack.
But it doesn't matter. If you've got a counter-attacking system that you push men forward,
and the counter-attacking system is specifically to be negative, is it not? You're keeping
it's
a catenaccio, isn't it? You're keeping men behind the wall and you're breaking the pace.
Of course
is that what happens?
Change the question around. Did you expect something else before they appointed Mourinho or when he came? Everybody knows his style, right?
But this is my point, Linton. If United were going to appoint Mourinho, obviously we knew what was coming.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it would be this bad because he's used these methods before with other clubs and got results.
You
he's not doing that, United.
So spoiled, you know that?
I am.
You sound so spoiled. It's not fair. We're not playing good football. It's not fair.
It's not only the good football.
I remember rubbish football under Ferguson in the late 80s. I remember rubbish football under Ferguson in the mid 90s and with Cleberson and even in the noughties, sorry, with Cleberson and Jemba Jemba. These things happen. You just got to accept it.
Yeah, yeah. One bad season, and then turned it
around.
One
bad season, did he? Okay. Listen, I'm going to go back to what Jonas said when he came on. He said, you bring in Mourinho not to play pretty football, but to win your trophies. He came in the first season, he won two. Case closed. Done. Right, next.
Disagree.
Next. Linton, let's talk about Burnley, because they've been exceptional this season, and they earned the draw at Old Trafford without a number of key players. What do you make of their season so far? Has much been made about them in the Netherlands?
Yeah, after the draw against Manchester United, there was a lot of articles about it and a lot of attention. You know, they're doing good, and every season you have this surprises, of course. And what I see is that, you know, as a squad, you have to know what your strengths are. But for them, it's really important to know what their weaknesses are, and they change everything in the squad to avoid their weaknesses during the games, and that's the thing what pays off, I think. So, you know, they're doing good, and I think they will keep doing good because they know what they can do.
Absolutely. And the thing is, Sean Dyche has been lauded out here, Linton. Are they talking much about him on the continent? Because I don't know whether it's just in the UK where we kind of big up these British managers. Is he getting a mention out there?
No, not a lot, because we have a lot of trouble going on. Frank de Boer and Koeman, of course, so he doesn't get a lot of attention.
That's fair enough. Ben, would you have him at Newcastle? Would you be just too worried for his future, given the hierarchy?
I most definitely. Do you know, I think what's remarkable, particularly as well about Burnley this season, they probably lost, two of maybe their, or perceived as being their best players from last year in Andre Gray and Michael Keane. And you look at the likes of Tarkowski, who's come in, and Chris Wood, supported by Ashley Barnes. He's done an amazing job. I like his style of play. I like his style. As a manager, he's man management. There's no airs and graces. It's all black and white. And I would take him hands down.
Yeah. Would you take him at United?
I'll take anybody right now.
I'm going to win with you tonight.
No.
Anyway, right. So while Man United are ending 2017 in a bit of a mess, the same can't be said about Spurs, who appear to be back in form, having scored 8 in their last 2 games. Now, Ben, Harry Kane scored his 6th hat-trick of 2017 and has ended the calendar year as Europe's highest goal scorer with 55 goals. Now, I can't really think of any flaws in his game. And someone that has watched Alan Shearer over the years, can you see any in Harry Kane's game?
Do you know what? I never thought I would see another player like Alan Shearer in my lifetime. And Harry Kane comes very, very close to that. I'm yet to see any flaws in his game. I expect to see a dip, but the man is just a machine. He keeps on delivering. You know, he's bounced back from, he's had a couple of serious injuries over the last sort of 12 months, a couple of, you know, ankle problems, and that hasn't deterred him. He's come back, he's hit the ground running. He's just a complete player for me, both on and off the pitch. You know, he gets the headlines for the right reasons, you know, and I'll use maybe Paul Pogba as an example. You know, Kane's not out there with his flash haircuts and his daft Instagram posts and, you know, his social media form. He just gets on with his job and he does it so, so well. A complete player for me, who, do you know what, he'll carry the weight of the nation on his shoulders in Russia. That's a really, you know, a big tournament from him, and I don't know, I can see checkbooks, well, if they exist, then, you know, there could be a lot of money, you know, a lot of clubs clamouring for his signature. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what, I'm going to go on a limb here and say, if Harry Kane had, I don't know whose boot sponsor is, Adidas or Nike, whatever. If he had as much of a circus going around him as, say, Pogba does or David Beckham did, people would be talking about him as the best player in the world. But because that doesn't happen, no one talks about him as the best striker. It's always about, you know, your Agüeros. It's all about this one, all about that one. But then no one really, you know, we did that show a few weeks ago with others about the top five strikers in the world. And a lot of people were saying Harry Kane was fifth. They put Lewandowski ahead of him. They put Agüero, and probably rightly so. But as I said, if he had that circus going around him, if he had the billboards, if he had the adverts, if he had his own dance moves or whatever, you know, people would be talking about him as the best striker in the world. But Linton, let's talk about Dele Alli, another fellow who's signed up with Adidas. It looks like he's changing his agent soon, mate. Can you see him staying at Spurs beyond this season?
I think you know, if there's big money coming, he will be gone. We've seen it. Nobody expected Neymar to go for this amount. We saw it today with Virgil van Dijk going to Liverpool for this crazy amount. So I think if Real Madrid or Barcelona comes with the checkbook, he will be gone for sure, sure.
Do you think he'll engineer a move, or do you think Daniel Levy will back down, because we know that he's a very stubborn guy?
I have no idea. The thing I know is when there's money being thrown, you know.
That's what I expect an agent to say. He's going to sit right on that fence. He's going to get those splinters on his backside.
He's changed his agent recently, hasn't he? Is it Jorge Mendes now?
He's changing it.
He changed to the...
Jorge Mendes?
Huh?
Jorge Mendes?
Yeah,
He's gone to Mendes?
He's gone to Mendes, that's
right. Wow, okay.
That's he signed with a company close to Mendes, I believe. Something like that. It's not the same company, something like that.
He'll either end up at Real Madrid or Man United.
Yeah, I was going to say, he'll get his move.
Definitely. Absolutely. Ben, talk to me about Chelsea, because they beat Brighton 2-0. I think that's their sixth home win in a row. They're now 1 point behind United and 12 behind City. Do you think they're the only team that can realistically put pressure on Guardiola's men?
I wouldn't even, at this moment in time, I'm not even thinking it's realistic to say Chelsea are able to put pressure on City. you know, everything's in their hands. And can you see, not only can I not see City maybe, you know, losing 4, 5, 6 games, which they may have, it's the teams in behind them that I can't see winning those games to catch up and make up the difference. You know, there's been a lot of talk in the media about, you know, a lot of issues behind the scenes, maybe problems in the change rooms. But, you know, Chelsea have just sort of quietly got on with their work and grinding out results. Do you know, I think you kind of discount Arsenal, Tottenham. I think they'll all have a say at some point. But for me, you know, it's home and hose. It's City all the way. It just depends, you know, how many points, you know, how hard do you want to push things? You know, once the Champions League comes around again, we'll see, you know, injuries and suspensions and deep into the season might have a bearing on what type of teams can, you know, Pep can put out. I think the loss of Vincent Kompany tonight, You know, maybe he makes the Van Dijk sale to Liverpool. Maybe that sticks in his throat a little bit. He needs to be bringing in another centre-back because potentially that's a problematic area. I know they've got Stones coming back soon. Otamendi is prone to the odd, you know, yellow card or sending off. He dropped Fernandinho in there tonight. He always seems to be walking on a disciplinary tightrope. So I think it's, you know, it is City's to lose, and the rest, you know, will put up a little bit of a fight, let's just say. But realistically, no.
I think the scary thing about this is that City can lose their next four games and they'll know that the team below them will still drop points anyway, so not much ground will be made up on them, really. It's a mess, isn't it, this season? Absolute mess. Well, mate, Liverpool, they made light work of a very wounded Swansea. What they say about, you know, fear a wounded animal, where they absolutely battered them 5-0. Yep. Firmino got on the score sheet twice, which were his 14th and I think 15th goals of the season in all competitions, mind. He's another striker who's gone under the radar as one of the best in the league, isn't he?
I rate Firmino. I think he's a brilliant footballer. Firmino, for me, reminds me a bit of Carlos Tevez. He's not an out-and-out goal scorer. He's not an out-and-out striker, but he still scores goals, and his work rate is phenomenal. You see him in the left-back position, in the right-back position. He works so hard. He's the type of striker that, you know, when they say... you know, where the striker works from the front, he does that. You know, and the other two as well, they complement each other so well. The front three at Liverpool, they're devastating, to be honest. You know, not want to sound boring going back to United. This is the kind of football I like watching, in the sense of Liverpool's kind of style of attacking football, where they just go for teams. If defensively they got it a bit right, Liverpool will be up there with Man City challenging. So maybe the Van Dijk signing could be a blessing. Nobody's going to catch City this season, but Liverpool got a platform to build for next season.
Interesting.
Oh, unfortunately.
Interesting. Linton, speaking of Van Dijk, he's joined Liverpool. They smashed the world record fee for a defender. And he has, without question, been one of the standout defenders in the Premier League in recent seasons, mate. How do you think the move will benefit him, Liverpool, and the Dutch national team?
Yeah, for him, it's now it's time to step up also his game up in the national team, because he hasn't been a key player for the last time. And with this move, you know, being the most expensive defender in history, it's his job to be now a key player in the national team. But I think it's going to be hard, because the national team is also like Swansea, a wandered animal. We're struggling, and it's not easy to take the squad and lead them. So, yeah, I think he will get a lot of pressure for the national team. I don't know how he's going to cope with that.
Don't you think it's a weird one still with this Van Dijk one? In the sense of Liverpool tried all summer to get him. Southampton reported Liverpool for whatever reason. And then they've gone back in January and bought him. Why don't I just buy him at the start of the season and save all the shenanigans? What was the point?
I think Southampton wanted to make a point.
You know?
Yeah, I think the player, you know, if they blocked the deal at that time, but if a player wants to go, nobody wants a player on the team who wants a transfer. If everybody still knows he wants to go there, then, you know, what's the point of having him?
Do you know what, Ben? I don't know if you believe this, Ben, but I think it was more like a little moral victory for Southampton, but nothing more than that. It was like, yeah, we've fended them off for as long as we could, and we won the little battle, but the war, they lost well and truly.
Yeah. I mean, they also won another $25 million for their cause, you know, delaying the transfer by, you know, a few months. I think at the time, you know, Van Dijk was coming off the back of quite a serious injury. He hadn't played any football since January. So to expect him to, you know, he would have been under serious amounts of pressure arriving at Anfield in the summer and being expected to perform at his highest level. So I think that was maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise just for him. And Southampton holding out and standing firm, you see, it's worked out well. I think when, you know, the Lukaku transfer, what was it, in the region of sort of $90 million, and that, you know, then it all, you know, transfer, it all realms of possibility what opened at that stage. And, you know, to eke out another 25 million for somebody who's been quite poor this season. Yes, he's had his head turned. And yes, he's, you know, there's been questions with regards to his general fitness and in terms of his condition and sharpness. But, you know, to eke that extra money out of a player who, supporters feel that, you know, hasn't been performing at his highest level. Unlike somebody like maybe, you know, you can compare him to somebody like Coutinho, who had his head turned at Barcelona in the summer. And if reports are to be believed, he wanted that move. He was disappointed that didn't happen. But his performances, you know, that interest in the summer, you know, have possibly elevated his performances for Liverpool this season. You know, the complete opposites happened with Van Dijk. And I think that says a lot about the character of both of those players.
Absolutely. And the thing is, he's not cup tied either, so he can play in the Champions League,
yep,
which is an added bonus for him.
Yeah. Big. I mean, if you look at the, you know, the Sevilla game, or Liverpool's inability to close games out is a huge concern for Jurgen Klopp. So he just needs to spend another 50, 60, 70 million on a goalkeeper now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they're in big trouble in that position. Yeah. But yeah, I just think it'll be interesting to see if he can form a partnership with Matip, because he had a fairly decent start to his Liverpool career before he got a couple of injuries here and there. And then came the Wolves game, which we're not going to discuss. Right, Ben, Bournemouth, their dramatic last-minute equaliser left everyone associated with West Ham absolutely fuming. As you know, Callum Wilson's goal was initially ruled out for offside when referee Bobby Madeley changed his mind and gave it. To add insult to injury, it actually looked like the vital touch was with handball, wasn't it? Yeah. So do the Moyes boys have every right to be livid?
Yes. Look, referees, it's human, and you know, even watching it in real time, it was maybe the offside decision, certainly, you know, what we're talking about, you know, a matter of inches. And although I think the big thing for Moyes was that the linesman actually, his assistant, flagged, and the referee overruled it. Now, that's a frustrating thing for David Moyes, you know, whether rightly or wrongly on the offside decision. But to get two of those wrong, with it being the handball, you know, it's a double whammy. And I think quite rightly, David Moyes was raging with that.
What do you make of David Moyes so far at West Ham? Because I think he's done pretty well, to be fair. I mean, I was one of the many who laughed at his appointment, but I think he's laughing in our faces.
Yeah, you know what it is? He probably feels he's got a lot to prove, you know, given particularly if you look at close to home up here on Weir side, his record at Sunderland. I mean, you know, as a Geordie, that was great for us. You know, and going in at West Ham, you know, he wasn't the fans' most popular choice. They were very divided. But he's come in and he has solidified the club a little bit. You know, there was a lot of talk with regards to distance covered and the you know, the general fitness and conditioning of the players. And, you know, that's something that you know, David Moyes is going to be good at. He's going to drill his players. He's going to have them organised and he's going to have them fit. You know, he's very along the lines of a Sam Allardyce. Get the basics right, get that foundation right. And if you look at maybe the improved performances of Marko Arnautović in recent games, you know, I think that's, if you want to judge, you know, or what kind of impact Moyes has had on the club, just look at Arnautović from, you know, from now and under Bilic. It's massive.
That's right. And I'll tell you what, I think David Moyes actually learnt from his mistakes at Man United, whereby he got rid of a whole bunch of the backroom staff that had been there for years. Whereas at West Ham, he's brought in people like Stuart Pearce, who understands the club in and out. He's brought in Billy McKinley, who's had a pretty decent record at Watford, even though he was there for only a few games.
Yeah.
And who else did he bring in? He brought in Alan Irvine,
yeah,
who I think was his number two at Everton. So he's obviously got a core of people that know the Premier League, have got the experience, have got, you know, players that have recently kind of retired, so to speak, because McKinley hasn't not long retired, was it been 6 or 7 years, something like that. Yeah. And Stuart Pearce, that knows the club's DNA. So I think he's done things the right way this time.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow.
I know.
We agree on something. Wow.
It is Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. It must be.
Exactly. Right, mate, a week is a long time in football. Stoke have actually earned 4 points out of their last two games since the last show we did. And they beat fellow strugglers West Brom. So Mark Hughes' men are actually up to 13th in the table. Mm. So, what's that? I think they're five above Bournemouth in the relegation zone. Sorry, three above the relegation zone and five behind Watford, who are actually in 10th.
Yeah. It's the core of clubs up there where a few results and you can go from, like you said, to like 16th to like 11th. Yeah, that's what it is. Stoke will never go down for me. They've got decent players that will get them out of trouble. There's worse clubs than Stoke in the league. Hughes was under pressure, so he needed these kind of results to turn it around. They were lucky against Huddersfield. They should have had a Stonewall penalty with, was it Mame Diouf, I think, at the end. Where that was a penalty. That goes 2-1. All of a sudden, there's another 3 points. So, but, you know, for the fact that he was under pressure to turn it around in the last few games, show that he's got character and the players are still kind of playing for him as well, which is good for Mark Hughes.
Yeah, because the other week we thought they weren't playing for him, and now they've decided
to play. So
I think he must have given a good kick up the backside.
Yeah, Hughes is not someone that takes a lot of rubbish, does he?
He doesn't mess about. Nope. Ask Fabregas. Right, in other news, Barcelona moved 9 points clear at the top of La Liga, 14 ahead of their deadly rivals Real Madrid, following a 3-0 win at the Bernabeu. Ben, up until Barca's first, Real Madrid actually looked totally in control of the game, mate, but they couldn't find a way past Ter Stegen. The title's pretty much done and dusted out there too. What's actually impressed you most about this Barca side?
Initially, how they've coped without Neymar, first and foremost. I think, you know, new manager coming in, Valverde, wants to, you know, implement his own philosophy, his own tactics, which have been questioned on a number of occasions this season. You know, Messi reportedly questioned, you know, whether his style was maybe stifling Barcelona's free-flowing football. But you know what? Take a look at the league. Take a look at the number of goals scored, and look how many they conceded. And that answers a lot of questions. You know, a lot of doubters out there. And at this stage, you cannot have nothing but the utmost respect and praise for what he's actually done at Barcelona up until this stage.
There you go. What does Messi know?
Sell him.
I heard a very, very interesting stat last night with regards to Messi against the Real Madrid. And it amounted to the fact that throughout the duration of the full game, he only actually ran for 5 minutes. Full sprint for 5 minutes. And yet, what was it, a goal and an assist and a man of the match award?
Yeah,
superb.
On another level, that guy.
That's right.
Valverde's looked at what Barcelona have, and he's adapted to the players that they've got. You know, like your Iniesta's, your Xavi's. Xavi's not there anymore. Iniesta's is older. Neymar's gone. So he's gone in there thinking, I don't have these players that I can play the expansive football that Barcelona did. So what he's done, he's made them defensively sound and used Suarez and Messi and Rakitic as the focal up front to get results. And it's worked, you know. And you've got to hand it to him as well, because it's brave going into Barcelona and changing their philosophy and ethos and implementing your style of not defensive football, but a little bit more cautious.
Yeah.
And look at them. They've been phenomenal.
Do you know what? I haven't watched much of Barcelona this season. So forgive me for saying this, but at the weekend, that was the first time I've ever seen Barcelona play two banks of four when they were without the ball.
That's right.
It was incredible.
Yep.
It was absolutely... And the way that they won the ball... I mean, Busquets, the way he won the ball for the first goal and his pass, might as well give him an assist for that one.
He's the best midfielder for me. Busquets.
Central midfielder, holding midfielder.
Yeah.
Better than Kante, 100%.
Oh, 100%.
100%. All right. Case closed. Right, Linton, Ajax, they've sacked head coach Marcel Kaiser and Dennis Bergkamp after a very poor start to the season, as described by general manager Edwin van der Sar. Now, Michael Reisiger has been appointed interim head coach with Winston Bogaard as his assistant. Yeah. God, 80 grand a week. Yeah. Ajax seem to have, as the kids say, no chill at the moment. What on earth is going on there?
It seems to be, you know, like a fight of of power, who has the power up front. Last summer, of course, there were some problems regarding Peter Bosz. Before the move to Dortmund, it seemed that he would stay, but he had some problems with Bergkamp and the other assistant coach, Spijkerman, at that time, and it seemed like they worked him out, and it seemed like Bergkamp wanted to bring in Marcel Keizer, who's not a very experienced coach. He came from the second team, and he before he was in the second league in Holland, and now they fired him. And what I've heard is that Bergkamp didn't like that fact, and he got in a fight or something with Overmars and Van der Sar, and they said then you get the hell out of here also.
Well, this is intriguing because you got three former teammates in the Dutch national team.
Yes. You'd
have thought that they maybe got on a little bit, you know, like Van der Sar, Overmars played at Berkham at Arsenal. So where's the animosity come from? It's confusing.
It's common though with Dutch players, don't you think, over the years?
What are you trying to say?
Everybody, you know, Seedorf, Van Basten, Hullet, they all fall out with each other.
Are you suggesting people like Edgar Davids are flaky?
I didn't say that. I'm just saying, with Dutch players over the years, it just seems like normal that everybody falls out with each other.
Yeah, Schneider fell out with
Van Gaal and Koeman. They absolutely...
Van Gaal and Cruyff.
Cruyff, I mean... Let's move on.
but these guys really played together. You know?
Which is more...
Reiziger, Bogarde, they all played together. And it's crazy. I really don't get it.
What do you think it is, Linton?
You know, they all want the power. Cruyff is not around anymore. Van Gaal is not involved in Ajax at the moment. So it's all about power, I think.
It's a big club, and for it to fall so far from grace is incredible. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they did very well to get in the Europa League final last season, but they've had a really bad season so far, and I think it might take a while for them to actually, you know, become one of the big boys again in Europe, because they've become a selling team now, haven't they?
Yeah,
big time, and they know it. And then they have their scouting. They bring in a lot of young kids on trials, and they buy, you know, they bought this winger from Heerenveen before the start of the season. He didn't even play one game in the first team, and they bought him for $2 million. You know, things like that. For Holland, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But Ajax, they do it, and like you said, they became a selling team.
Well, they've seen PSV run away with the title this year, Feyenoord winning it last year. So,
I'm not so sure about that, actually.
No.
PSV. Not
the panic
steady
button. The fact that they're so far away from the others.
True, but PSV is not so steady at all. But Ajax destroyed them at home.
Yeah, but they're picking up results every week, though, aren't they? PSV.
True.
I think they're just more consistent than everybody else.
Season is still long.
Yeah.
Very true. We'll talk at the end of the season, Linton.
Yeah. Well, look, another league that's still on is Serie A, and Hamsik, he leapfrogged
Maradona,
as Napoli's leading scorer. There's two more stories, which is Juventus beating Roma 1-0,
yep,
and Inter losing further ground on Napoli, losing 1-0 at Sassuolo. Quite a weekend, wasn't it?
It's always interesting in Italy at the moment. For me, it's the best league to watch. It's the most entertaining.
It's open.
Everybody's up there, which is exciting because you possibly don't know who's going to win it this year.
Apart from Milan.
They were playing Inter tonight in the derby in the Coppa Italia. 0-0. So it was 0-0. So it went extra time. So don't know what happened after that. But incredible for Hamsik to achieve what he's done at Napoli. The fact that he showed a lot of loyalty to Napoli as well. He could have moved a few times, but he decided to stay in Naples.
Another Matt Letizia.
Should have, would have, could have. Juve beating Roma. Juve needed that, to be honest. They needed a big result because they drew with Inter last week, or was it the week before? Yeah, so they kind of needed a result just to get themselves back going. And Inter, you know, I thought they'll bounce back, but it seems like they've gone the other way. I mean, Sassuolo, historically over the last few years, they've mullered them 7-1 and 7-0, etc. So to go and lose 1-0, that was a big disappointment.
And your man missed the penalty as well.
Icardi, yeah. That's right. What do I know, eh?
Right, let's talk about Emmanuel Boué, because he made the headlines this week after admitting he hides from bailiffs, sleeps on the floor of a friend's house, and he even washes his clothes with his bare hands. Now, all of this is because of a hostile split from his wife. Now, the district judge in the case ruled against Boué in his absence at the Central Family Court, although the former Arsenal defender insists health issues meant he couldn't attend. To make matters worse, the court document suggests he didn't complete a Form E, which focuses on assets and liabilities, although Boué is adamant he was unable to get access to the documents because he's actually thrown out from the house. Gents, I know Boué told the Daily Mirror about his anguish and believes he has enough evidence to explain his absence from the hearings. What do you make of all of this? Well, let's start with you, little man.
Cool. A footballer with all that money who doesn't know what to do with it or didn't know how to control his money. I mean, I think he publicly said that as well, where he had a lot of money and he just didn't know what to do. As for... I don't know if I've got this right or not. I think Galatasaray have offered him a way out, if I'm not
apparently
mistaken.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they've
under
offered
40s.
Him... That's right. So if that's his lifeline to get himself out of trouble, then good luck to him. You don't want to, even though he's a footballer, you don't want to see anybody struggle like that. As to make of the whole situation, I don't know, I guess his wife's taken everything and he's left him with nothing, I guess. I mean, that's the scenario I think I'm reading here. So unless there's more behind the scenes with money issues or gambling issues or whatever he might have that we don't know about. But it's sad to know that a player earning how much money is, you know, at Sunderland and Galatasaray, where they paid him a lot of money, in a situation like this, is crazy to think that in the modern day.
Linton, you kindly reminded me of this earlier this morning. What do you make of the whole situation, mate?
Yeah, I think it's dramatic. You know, like Giannis said, that if you made so much money through your career, and because how long is he now without playing football?
Because he had the ban, didn't he? Didn't have a ban for like 9 months for an agent dispute where you're
Yeah,
true. So you got banned out of that as well.
And crazy, you know, already having these problems. If it has been for like, you know, 5-6 years, okay, I can understand. If you don't have a plan and you just throw around your money, okay, in a certain moment you will go bankrupt. But you know, this is crazy. And I read something that his wife had control about the finances during their marriage and stuff like that, and that he trusted the wrong people and he had no idea what was going on, you know, things like that. I don't understand. I really don't understand.
Linton, tell me something, right? As an agent yourself, right? I mean, obviously agents have got a bad rep over the past few years and whatnot, but as your role as an agent, are you more of a mentor as well? Are you an advisor? What do you do for your players? I mean, if you were, like, for example, if you were Boué's agent while he was playing, what advice would you have given him? Because obviously he's bankrupt at the moment, and he, as you said before, he was, you know, given the wrong information and or mixed with the wrong people. How would you police the whole thing?
I think for me the most important thing is to be transparent. That's the first. That's my starting point. I'm transparent about what I make on him. Going from there, if you're transparent about that, it's easier for a player to open up, because there's more trust. Because you saw it, he had problems with his former agent about money, stuff like that. If you get past like that stuff, you can mentor a guy. You can show him what you do with your money and things like that. So it's all about having the trust and mentoring.
Absolutely. And Ben, we've seen it happen to the likes of Kenny Sansom, mate. I'm interested to know your take on this, because when I first heard it, I'm a skeptic when it comes to things like this. And while it's horrible to see a Boué like that, so many things popped into my head. I was thinking, well, why did his wife get so much? Yeah. You know, we always hear one side, we never hear the two sides or the third side, which is ultimately the truth. But why would his wife get so much? And why have Arsenal distanced themselves from this? And why has he only got one friend? It doesn't make sense to me.
Obviously, a lot of questions there that I can't answer. I mean, one of the things that sort of rung sort of home to me, and it was quite pertinent, was, you know, he openly admitted his lack of an education and contributed to his failure to maybe understand the severity of the actions taken against him, the orders, the processes, and that's something that he's probably been dealing with, you know, throughout his life. You know, maybe education took was moved to the back burner for a football career, but that was something that was never picked up. And you know, when we're talking about dealing with huge and vast sums of money, you would think that clubs have these, you know, these safety nets in place to advise and to support players and to have that network around them to ensure that, you know, things like this don't happen, and really that they shouldn't happen. You know, he has been sort of ill advised along the way. The reasons as to why, you know, we can't say, we could only speculate. But I think, you know, there's a lot of factors to consider there, and it's just, you know, a very unfortunate incident for him and those associated with him, you know, because it's you know, it's devastating, really.
Mm.
It's happened to a few players, though, isn't it, still? The ones that bring in David James was one of them. Eric Jumba-Jumba at United. He went bankrupt as well.
Etherington.
Gambling problem. Sad to think that the amount of money that goes into these people's bank accounts to end up in a situation like that. Mm. You imagine how much money they've lost.
Yeah.
I don't really recall how much it was, but there was a guy who did research to it, and it was like a certain percentage of the players who made like between 1 and 3 million during their career, I think like 25% of them will be bankrupt within 5 to 7 years.
Is that because of bad investing in their money, or?
Also, but you know, if you make between 1 and 3 million during your career, and you know how football players spend, you can't keep up for the rest of your life. You know, you have to know, like, okay, now I'm making a little bit more, but I have to save, and after my career, my monthly salary will go down. But that's hard, you know, if you're used to spending money on designer brands.
Absolutely. Well, look, we hope he gets on the straight and narrow, so to speak, because, I mean, we know that apparently he's been offered legal support by numerous people. No doubt they're probably Arsenal fans over there, but good luck to the guy. And good luck to George Weah, who actually has won the race to become the president of Liberia.
He won?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he claims he's won. So, yeah, the thing is, he played for City and Chelsea, and I guess we'll never know if he can do it on a cold Wednesday night in Stoke. But anyway, right.
He might these days. Stoke's not what they used to be.
So, yeah. Right. Now we're going to end our show with our bite back feature, which obviously we involve our Facebook listeners and Facebook viewers, so to speak. And we asked everyone, what is your favourite football moment of 2017? And blimey, we got a lot of... a lot of responses, so I'm going to try my best to go through as many as possible without boring everyone. Julia Rostel, our good friend who's currently in Vegas, says, for me, scoring the first goal against Real Madrid was something I'll remember for the rest of my life. It was unreal. She's a Spurs fan. Michael says it has to be the cup final. That day had it all for an Arsenal fan. Pascal Jimbonda says, I would say the best moment was Messi winning the Clásico at Bernabeu with 10 seconds of stoppage time to go. Amber Van Lieshout, who's our friend in the Netherlands. You might know her. She's a reporter as well, Linton. She says it has to be the Women's Euro title for the Netherlands. They won it this year. A lot of Arsenal fans are saying the FA Cup, obviously. Marco Lima in Brazil says watching Lineker, Ferdinand, Owens and Gerrard. I can't say these words. Do something over Sergio Roberto's last goal. I can't say last gasp goal. I can't. It's just like a tongue twister for me. Let's have a look. Which ones can I read out without any profanity? For crying out loud. Joe Ucello in America. I don't know about a favourite, but definitely the most dramatic was the Barcelona comeback on PSG in the Champions League. Probably the most amazing 10 minutes of football ever. He has a point. Adam in Australia says, outside of Europe, Sydney FC won the Premiership. First past the post, and the Championship Grand Final for the 2016-17 season. Lost one game all season, best defence in the history of the league, most clean sheets, biggest winning margin for the Premiership, And we had the FFA Cup in October. Not a bad 27 at all.
They've been brilliant.
They have been, haven't they? And the head coach has been earmarked for the
Australia yeah. That's right.
Yep. Dan DeLuca says, Benevento being promoted to Serie A at the first time of asking. The little town near the family home not worked out well for them, but there are a few who appreciate quite what an achievement that was. More Arsenal fans. Hugo Falco, from a Brazil perspective, it has to be beating Argentina with ease 3-0. And knowing that Tite has confirmed he is the right man for the job. Now for Flamengo, not much to shout about after a disappointing year, but would have to be closing seconds of the Brazilian Championship with a last minute penalty put us through to the group stage of the next year's Libertadores at the detriment of our rivals Vasco, whose fans are already celebrating leapfrogging us in the table. And where a late goal by Chape took away Botafogo, our rivals, placing the Libertadores as well, all in a matter of 60 to 90 seconds.
94th minute, that goal was.
Yep. And on a final note, I've got loads from South Africa, but I'm not going to go into those ones because I don't understand South African football too much and I don't want to be ignorant, but I don't know about
Kaiser Chiefs. Orlando Pirates.
They're a band. Now, Mike, who's a Spurs fan, Harry Kane smashing Alan Shearer's record, finishing top of the Champions League group, beating Arsenal in the last ever North London derby, and Arsenal finishing outside the top four, and then Wenger signing a two-year contract. There you go. Right, Ben, what's your highlight of 2017, mate, if I haven't put you asleep?
Bear with me on this one. So we're talking about Aston Villa. Jack Grealish, right. 89th-minute equaliser. It home to Brighton and Hove Albion. Significant because Newcastle, just three games before, was 7 points behind Brighton. Pushing for the championship title. Newcastle, we beat, I think it was Preston and Cardiff, and went into the last game against Barnsley, knowing that if we won and Brighton didn't, we would go up as champions. Brighton had come off the back of an away defeat to Norwich. They got beat at home off Bristol City and were winning 1-0 up until the 89th minute, which effectively had won them the championship, and Jack Grealish popped up, got the equaliser, and against all the odds, 60-1, and here's an ad, Newcastle's odds were of winning the championship with three games to go, we'd done it. So that was a great day in the big market on that Sunday.
Excellent. What about yours?
I've got two, if I may.
Go on.
The Barcelona PSG game. It was just incredible. And on a personal level, United winning the Europa League. Nice hat, though.
Thank you very much. And Linton, what's yours?
For me, for sure, also the Barcelona comeback against PSG. This was crazy. I recall, remember watching the defiance and Sergio Roberto scored the 6-1, crazy.
Even I jumped up and I didn't even care. It was that exciting where it was like, get in.
I have to admit, I also jumped up.
Yeah, it was just one of them games where you just wanted them to score because, you know, it was just one of them games.
Do you know what? With that game, everyone, I don't know anyone who gave Barcelona the snowball's chance in hell. Honestly.
Not after Cavani scored as well, you know, because it was 3-0, wasn't it? And Cavani made it 3-1 and you thought, that's it, game over. And then Neymar.
And the last two goals weren't like... When did Neymar score the 5-1? It was like...
He scored 90th minute, and then it was a penalty. Yeah. 92nd, and Roberto 96 or 97, something silly like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Something silly.
It was incredible.
Not the hat.
Not the hat. It suits you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, yeah. Yeah, mine has to be... you're winning the Europa League for United.
As a United fan.
You know? But you know what? I think what makes it even better is that we had to win. There was so much pressure. Yeah. I was sweating.
You weren't the only one.
Honestly, I was sweating. We had to win. There was no excuses, nothing.
Yeah.
And when John Guidetti missed that chance against Celta, I knew that was it.
Missed the open goal.
Missed that completely.
Last minute.
My legal stream cut out the moment before it came to him. I said legal. Anyway, right, that's us for this week. I'd just like to say thank you to this hat. I'd like to say thank you to Linton and Ben for coming on the show, guys. Thank you ever so much for your time. It's been absolutely great having you on. Linton, what's your Twitter handle, mate?
Linton Jason.
There you go. Excellent. Ben
At Ben Dinnery.
Excellent. And I've been following your tweets very closely, my friend. I like them. Very, very entertaining.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that.
My pleasure, mate. What's your Twitter handle? Because you've just about started tweeting again.
Yannickis J.
It's like you're going to hibernation.
I do. When United lose, I'm off on one.
Oh, yeah. I know it. Right, we're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. You can follow me at The Only Stell. We also have a Facebook group page. Join the page. Get involved. We have a lot of good contributors, as you've probably heard, even though I can't spell or read sometimes. So, yeah, until next time.
Wish everyone a happy new year.
Wait, hang about. When are we back on?
Tuesday.
Which is the second.
Second.
Okay, happy new year, guys.